comes the sun, little darling. Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right. It's all right.
Hey, everybody. You're on Voices from the Frontlines, your national movement building show. This is KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and streaming live on the web on kpfk.org. This is your host, Eric Mann. Our next colleague, because we don't have a guest, is Nora Arakat. She's a human rights attorney and activist. She's also assistant professor at George Mason University, and she's co-editor of Jadalia, an electronic magazine on the Middle East. Nora, really nice to have you on Voices from the Frontlines.
Thank you, Eric. I'm happy to be here.
So, Nora, what we're going to do is we're going to listen to first Bernie Sanders on Palestine and the Middle East. Then we're going to listen to Hillary Clinton, who spoke at AIPAC. The only frame I'll give to this is that I'll start by saying that it's pretty terrific that Bernie Sanders did not attend AIPAC, saying he was too busy, which nobody had the guts to do. And Hillary's remarks are taped from the AIPAC meeting. Bernie's remarks are taped from the Anderson Cooper CNN interview. So we're going to begin with Senator Sanders, then we're going to listen to Hillary Clinton, and then Laura and myself, we're going to respond.
You've said that the U.S. should be even-handed when it comes to dealing with the Israelis and the Palestinians. So does that mean that the U.S. should remain neutral to achieve peace?
No, what it means is that if we want lasting peace in the Middle East, we have got to obviously make sure that the security and the independence of Israel remains intact. That is not a debate. Israel must continue to exist as an independent free state. But if we are going to have lasting peace, we have also got to work with the Palestinians. And what that means, we have got to recognize that for example, in Gaza, you got an unemployment rate of 44%. You have people living in horrific poverty. You have a community that was destroyed. So if we are going to go forward, it cannot be that the United States just takes the side of Israel. We've got to work with both communities to try to do what is very, very difficult, and that is create a lasting peace in the region.
Do you think the U.S. has not been even-handed up till now?
Right. I do not think so. I think that overwhelmingly the United States time and time again has looked aside when Israel has done some bad things. I think, for example, that the growth of settlements in Palestinian territory is not acceptable to me and not conducive to the peace process. I think that the kind of destruction that was wreaked on Gaza during that war was way above what needed to be done for military purposes. A lot of civilians were killed. A lot of hospitals and schools and apartments were destroyed above and beyond what had to be done. So look, I think there is no question that there's enough blame to go around on both sides. Israel has the right to defend itself against terrorist attacks, against Hezbollah, against Hamas. But I think the United States is stronger when we work with both sides.
We can't be neutral when rockets rain down on residential neighborhoods, when civilians are stabbed in the street, when suicide bombers target the innocent. Some things aren't negotiable. And anyone who doesn't understand that has no business being our president. So my friends, let us never be neutral or silent in the face of bigotry. Together, let's defend the shared values that already make America and Israel great. Let us do the hard work necessary to keep building our friendship and reach out to the next generation of Americans and Israelis so the bonds between our nations grow even deeper and stronger. Israel and America, our best days are still ahead.
I'm going to bite my tongue and listen to you.
It's hard to do that. I applaud you, Eric. So I just want to start by saying two overarching things before we distinguish the two candidates. One is that both candidates are perpetuating a myth, a mythology that we've built up in our political discourse that Israel faces an existential threat. And what that threat in our imagination looks like is the destruction of a state and the removal of a Jewish people in ways that harm them palpably. When in fact, the discussion over Israel's existence or lack thereof as far as a Palestinian audience is concerned is not over the existence of a Jewish people or a Jewish nation. It's over whether or not Israel will continue as a settler colonial state. And that settler colonial state operates to remove, dispossess, and contain a native Palestinian population, whether they live in the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, or within Israel proper. And so by perpetuating this myth of existential struggle, what these candidates are doing is obfuscating a political framework of settler colonialism and replacing it with one of, you know, irrational annihilation, and both are very guilty of that. The second is that as presidential candidates, this type of discourse and how much they can say and how much they can veer outside of this framework reflects, I think, not necessarily what the candidates believe or what any member of Congress believes, but rather a political calculus based on the way that our American system works. It's a system that is very pervious to special interests, that is very pervious to spending and the work of political action committees, whether it be the Israel lobby or the gun lobby. This is a system that is quite broken. And what sets Bernie apart, even if he's falling into this trap in this instance by forefronting all of his comments using this framework and also pandering to these special interests, what sets him apart is on his domestic policies, he recognizes this broken system, wants to repeal Citizens United, wants to push back on corporate influence on the political system. And so at least there we see there's a nuance that doesn't exist in the Clinton camp.
Well, I'm going to say that I don't think that Bernie is challenging either the domestic. I don't think that Citizens United in a white settler state. I think the United States is a white settler state and Palestine. Israel has created a white settler state, a European settler state in Palestine. So I'm agreeing with your first point, which is the most important point, is that you set a frame that we want the people in both camps who are working inside the Democratic Party grasp that the frame is wrong and that we're not going to say Bernie's better than Hillary on a point, but I really appreciate you starting the conversation with how we want people to do. I think for the Sanders people, they're these white populists, they are kids out of the Occupy movement. For them, they're going to say, well, look, he said something better than Hillary. But having said that, I do want to make some distinctions that are very important. I mean, the first thing is that I think in some ways these are the throwaway lines that every Israel knows that these are throwaway lines about we want lasting peace, blah, blah, blah. But you're not allowed to say but about Israel. That's the first thing. Then he says we have to work with the Palestinians. Just to say that I mean, we're talking about a fascist dialogue. So then we have to recognize that in Gaza you have unemployment rate of 44%. Wait, are there people in Gaza? Unemployment, do we assume that they're supposed to have employment? You have people living in horrific poverty. Community. Wait, the Palestinians are a community that was destroyed? So, this is Bernie speaking. The United States cannot just take the side of Israel. What? Of course the United States must take the side of Israel. No. Both communities. Wait, the Palestinians are a community? So, Anderson Cooper puts him on the spot. Do you think the United States has not been even-handed, which means Obama? Long pause, and I'm going, come on, Bernie. He says, no, I don't think so. I think overwhelmingly the United States time and time again has looked aside when Israel has done some bad things. It's a sad thing, Nora, to say Israel has done some bad things. I'm not talking about some little reforms. This is in a debate with Israel. Israel is not allowed to ever do bad things. The growth of settlements is not acceptable. Destruction racked upon Gaza. Now we get to the bad stuff. way above what is needed to be done for military purposes, Bernie. You have no right to determine. What you're saying is you're allowed to kill a certain number of civilians, but not too many. Then he goes back to the good thing about hospitals and schools and apartments. But then he has to end with terrorist attacks against Hezbollah and against Hamas, which means he's denying the right of self-determination for the Palestinian people to fight back, because he's saying what's bad about what happened to them. But then if they form any organization to really fight, he calls them terrorists. So my read of it, starting with Bernie, is this is still within this very sick discourse. It is a break. It's a major break with the conversation. And I think what we want to do is organize the people in the Bernie camp who barely, frankly, care about Palestine, but are fetishizing about Citizens United, to say, do you even understand this conversation? Did you hear what Nuoto said about the context is wrong? So I think our role is to struggle with people in both camps, but in particular, I have to say, to give Bernie some props within a sick system. What do you think on that?
I mean, the hardest thing the presidential candidate faces is having to speak to the broadest base. That means you're not speaking to the left, you're not speaking to the right. There's some lowest common denominator that you have to speak to, and that's going to trap any candidate. But I think that he has been, in my estimation, and you disagreed with this in the beginning, I think he's been much fearless on other issues. What he did in this issue to snub AIPAC, to say Palestinians exist, they matter, and they're not objects, but they're subjects, is basically saying the bare minimum. He's saying they're human beings. But he hasn't been as fearless as he's been in other spaces, right? He said, no, I'm not neutral because Israel is our friend and that's my number one priority and their security is number one. Everything else thereafter, the benefits and the likelihoods of survival for Palestinians, is contingent on securing Israel first. So it's saying they're humans, but their well-being, the extent to which we protect their well-being will be contingent on whether or not it suits Israel. And here we're reproducing the same discourse in the context that we're talking about now. Was it what I think is more important than the content of what he said? Because the content, as we're pointing out, is okay, right? It's okay. It's the bare minimum, especially in a moment where we're recognizing dehumanization processes and holding up, you know, a discourse of Black Lives Matter to continue the discussion of historic violence and historic anti-Black racism that constitutes our very foundation, right? The most amazing thing that he did was in form, not in substance. To snub the lobby, I think, was more important than what he actually said, because that's saying, look, this lobby is not as formidable as we make it out to seem, and I can be a candidate that doesn't have to pander to it in traditional ways.
Well, what I think we both agree on is that I want to emphasize that this is, as you said, the bare minimum. I think it's very important to struggle with the people to write, like, and we will, a letter to the people in the Sanders campaign to say, what Bernie said is not acceptable, which is what you said. These are breakthroughs. They are. Not going to AIPAC is important. But as you said, we can't begin the conversation with Israeli is the center of things. So one of the things I'm trying to say at Voices from the Front Lines is we are organizers. I'm seeing this as an opening. I'm seeing this, in other words, it's not he did good or he did bad, but I think he made a break. And I think our job is to drive that wedge much stronger and to call the question, which is great, what you have done and what we're trying to do. Now let's move back to Hillary. You go first.
Well, you know, what I think is really important is, how is it that almost every other issue in the United States becomes partisan, you know, in our broken two-party system of Democrat versus Republican? But on this issue, not only is it a bipartisan consensus on the place of Israel, notwithstanding empirical evidence that it neither makes America safer, doesn't fulfill our interests, especially since the collapse of the Cold War, and in fact is working against whatever interests we have as an empire. So I'm not saying that these interests are necessarily great, but just even from those who don't want to take a moral stand on the question of justice, right, who just want to think about what's the best for America. Israel's not even good for America on this. And yet we have Democrats and Republicans who don't shift in discourse. They read from the same script. And what was evident from Hillary's script is that she is to the right of the most outlandish Republican candidate, Donald Trump, on the issue of Palestine and Israel. She sounded like somebody who went to a fundraiser pandering for money, and not somebody who was going to present a vision. She literally read AIPAC's talking points verbatim. Her one mention of Israeli settlements, which, by the way, contravenes U.S. policy since the Lyndon B. Johnson administration, which was in power during the Six-Day War and the advent of settlement expansion. So from the very beginning, the U.S. has opposed settlements. Even her homage and mention of, you know, U.S. foreign policy becomes a footnote in an AIPAC adulation. I think that's pathetic. I think that's dangerous. I think it's the very reason we are seeing what we do see in the Middle East. Everybody's ready to condemn terrorism. Nobody's willing to name it or to talk about how is it that we actually root it out and not just drop more bombs. We already have an Iraq study group from 2006 that explicitly said that Israeli settlements are undermining U.S. interests and making the U.S. less safe. Well, None of that seems to matter.
Well, I think that, as we said, I think what Hillary did was terrifying to me. I mean, that whatever we want to say about Bernie's contradictions, when you compare it to we will march into the future, that the bonds between Israel and the United States and that kind of phony, and we must march forward, and the audience gets more hysterical. And I know that you and I and Israel and America will march forward and even have stronger. I mean, it got scary. It was like a mob hysteria that she was doing with that group, right? I think we both agree with that, that it's so unacceptable. The thing about there can be no neutrality. When he's saying the United States is tilting towards Israel inappropriately, so he's saying neutrality, which I agree, is not equal, but Israel does not accept any form of neutrality. She is saying anyone who believes that the Palestinians have any rights has no right to be president. So she's taken him on, not just Trump. And I think for him to have rejected going to AIPAC and listening to this, I want people to, you know, as you replay these two things, one is at least a measured, intelligent conversation about somebody trying to figure something out and saying, criticizing Obama and then criticizing, you know, his own administration. I think, as you said, for Hillary to read the talking points of AIPAC at that level of almost mass racist hysteria is terrifying to me. And I would hope the people, again, here's my point as an organizer, the people in the Hillary Clinton camp, whoever you are, you have to be outraged about this, and you have to be making demands on her to repudiate that whole experience. Do you? I'm asking you honestly, and Nora, that's why we have voices. We're having a conversation. I'll say, I think there's a qualitative difference in the two conversations. Do you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like I said, the form of Bernie not attending the rally, the fact that he acknowledged, you know, Palestinian humanity, unfortunately, that's how awful the conversation in the United States is, that even acknowledging a people's humanity becomes some radical proposition. That said, I applaud him for that, and it's completely different in substance and in form. Hillary went to the right of the Republican Party and stands out as, frankly, what will be a hero and a soldier for the neoconservative hawkish camp that wants more war. And I think that, you know, for anyone just to run on a Democratic platform, it says a lot about what the Democratic platform is, but also how informed her base must be okay with that. And to continue to assert, as many of her female supporters have done, that her womanhood somehow distinguishes her as a leader, when in fact feminism as a framework would reject everything that she said. Feminism intends to disrupt the status quo, patriarchal norms that parade as natural, and instead what she does is, you know, she has a very patriarchal approach that continues to perpetuate that status quo for the sake of the consolidation of her own power. And I think it's a disgrace to feminism and certainly stands apart from Bernie. Now, how distinct it is from it is what you and I are discussing. And I'm just saying, that gap between them that we see, that one can objectively say is vast, relative to the actual facts on the ground and to the conditions on the ground, don't amount to a great distinction in policy change.
Well, I think we agree on that, and let me end with this as two organizers, that I think the thing you just did about trying to explain feminism in an anti-imperialist perspective, I think my main point is we want to intervene in these campaigns. We're not passive consumers saying, well, Bernie is better than Hillary on this, or he's good and vote for him. Those in the Sanders camp need to, and I think you should write, that, yes, Bernie, appreciate the elemental humanity of the Palestinians, but you're arguing inside a pro-Israeli context. I mean, that's great. We totally agree with that. That's a good formula. I think the idea of saying challenging Hillary's pro-imperialist feminism or her front, you know, pro-imperialist fronting as feminism is also great. So what I'm getting to is I'm trying to sharpen my line. But my goal is to take these ideas to challenge the Sanders people, right? And then to challenge the Clinton people. Otherwise, you and I are just sitting on the outside having opinions. And as organizers, we want to go beyond having opinions to make history.
I could not agree with you more. And I appreciate, you know, as a human rights attorney and a scholar, you know, studying, you know, knowledge and knowledge production, all of the work that I do actually is in the service of being able to shift that status quo as organizers. We can talk and talk and talk and talk, but even the writing that we do or the conversations that we have are meant as tools of empowerment and ways of intervention. And if we don't like what we see, it's up to us to make that difference. Otherwise, we can blame ourselves. So I couldn't agree with you more on that note and on the value of this intervention. So thank you.
Noor Arakat, great to have you on the show. I am learning a lot in this conversation. That's why I like doing Voices from the Front Lines. I'm going to sharpen my game after the conversation with you. I've learned a lot of things. So Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, watch out. We're on your case. This is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Front Lines, KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. Streaming live on the web on kpfk.org. And check us out at voicesfromthefrontlines.com.
And now the end is near, and so I got to face the final curtain. Friends, I'll say it clear and state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full. I've traveled